that even if someone comes with an inimical intent towards us, by our speech, we should lower the hostility, the inner hostility of the other person. It's very important. Because generally when someone comes with a hostile intention to us, we also react. We come up. Yes, we also speak back in the same kind of way. But actually good speech, cultured speech means even if someone comes towards you with a menacing or hostile intent, or at least, with wanting to say something harsh to you, we should be calm and we should speak very pleasingly in such a way that even an enemy will feel disarmed and comfortable. So this is an example of how Hanuman was perfect in his speech and very pleasing. And his language was refined, perfect in every respect. We'll also speak about Lord Ram. There is a description in the Ayodhya Kanda, the first chapter, and certain words are used about Lord Ram's speech by Valmiki Muni. Mridu purvam tu bhashate. Mridu means soft. Purva means full of. So his bhashata, he speaks very softly and sweetly. Many times we see people speak very loudly. And especially I can say coming from India, Indians speak very loud. Wherever you see noisy people, you look around and I think you'll find Indians. Even if something can be spoken soft, someone sitting right in front of you, but you speak so loudly. If you travel in public transport in India, in buses and trains and railway station here and there, people speak much louder than is required. The person ahead is not hard of hearing, but he will become hard of hearing. That kind of volume will definitely affect his sense of hearing. So generally it is not considered culture to speak in a loud voice. Not just to elders, in front of elders to speak in a raised voice is never done. But even ordinarily with people one should not speak in a loud voice. So this is an important part. Mridu means speaking softly. As much as is required, the volume should be only as much as is necessary for the person in front of you to hear. Soft speech is very important for us. The next, so he's mridu bhashi, because he speaks softly. Not only is he mridu bhashi according to Valmiki Muni, he is madhura bhashi. Madhura means sweet. He speaks sweetly. Softly, and then he speaks sweetly. In the Ramayana we find descriptions of Lord Ram's behavior, his qualities and attributes, his speech and so on. Lord Ram is considered Maryada Purushottam. He is the perfection of character and personality. He is an ideal in whose footsteps we should try to follow as human beings. He sets the perfect example for us in all his dealings. He is very noble. A noble person never tries to display his strength or his attributes unnecessarily. A noble person, a genuinely strong person, will always be humble. And that will reflect in that person's speech as well. Arrogance also comes out very quickly in speech. So Lord Ram was mridu bhashi and madhura bhashi, soft-spoken and would speak sweetly. We must also remember that very sly and cunning people can also be madhura bhashi. They can also be speaking sweetly. Their words may be dripping in honey, but their intentions may be evil. So we should not be like that. And we should also be cautious of people who may be like that. So we should be genuinely well-wishing in our heart when we speak sweetly. The next is Purvabhashi. Purva means first. The first to initiate a talk. Whenever he would meet someone, in this case of Hanuman, of course, because it was a situation that he was anticipating could be dangerous, he had already encountered many demons along the way, he had killed them, so there was caution. But generally, in day-to-day interactions with people, he would always initiate the discussion. He would be the first one to speak. It is always the senior or the elder who must take the initiative to make the other person comfortable. So when somebody comes, they may be uncomfortable. So the elder or the senior starts speaking to make everything calm and to break the ice, so to speak. Sometimes there is an issue of ego, isn't it? Why should I say Hari Bol or Hare Krishna? This person should say Hare Krishna first to me. Then I will respond. If he or she doesn't say Hare Krishna to me, then I will not say. I will just look the other way. That's again our ego coming up, not just in speech, but also in the absence of speech. See, we speak as much through not speaking than through speaking. Actually, we speak more through not speaking than speaking. So not speaking is also an important aspect of speech. Yes? Am I getting too confusing? There's one quote which I heard one devotee speaking. It's actually spoken by a Christian saint many, many years ago. It's a very nice quote. I think it was Saint Francis of Assisi. He said, we must preach all day, and when necessary, we must speak. Yes? We must preach all day, and when necessary, we must speak. Can someone give me a purport to this? Who can give a purport? Yes.
So the way I understand that is your actions and the way that you behave around people should be enough should be enough to show people how you should be and how you should be. And so preaching isn't constrained to just your words, it should be your actions, and then that's if right. You need to speak.
That's absolutely right. So we don't simply preach to others by our words. You've heard that. Your actions speak so loud, I can't hear what you're saying. Yes? So pictures speak more than words, but actions speak more than pictures and more than words. So therefore the way we act and the way we behave is more important than what we speak. Because if there is a discordance between what we speak and what we act and how we act, then people will never be convinced. So there has to be a match between the two. So our behavior, which is when we're not speaking, is also preaching. So we're setting an example. So when the saint says we must preach all day, it means we must preach through our actions. And then when it's necessary, we speak. So, when we are interacting with people, we shouldn't hesitate to be the first one to wish someone or to greet someone. You know, a smile and a cheerful smile and a greeting doesn't cost us anything. You don't lose any money, right? We don't become weak and invalid because we have greeted somebody. So it's something nice to do. We live in a society where these things are very important. So Lord Ram set the example. He was Purvabhashi. He didn't stand on false ego. Priyam Vadaha. His speech was pleasing even to his enemies. And we'll come to that when we discuss Krishna's qualities very shortly. And another thing, Uchyamanopi Parusham Notaram Pratipadyate. When someone spoke hard words, Parusham, someone else, Uchyamanopi, even if somebody else spoke Parusham, hard words, what would you do? Na Uttaram Pratipadyate, you would not reply. Does not react to harsh words spoken by others. So generally when someone will speak harsh words to, speaks harsh words to us, we also react very harshly in our speech. You know, we give back capital plus interest. But Lord Ram was not like that. He would not speak harshly back to somebody who spoke harshly to him. You see, if someone speaks harshly to us, that's his problem or her problem. It's not our problem. It's between him or her and Krishna. So why should I bring myself down to that level and respond in equal measure? So Lord Ram demonstrated this. So he would not react. Even if somebody came forward and spoke harsh words, then he would speak in such a way that the person who spoke harsh words would become very regretful. And then he would offer apologies or something. So this is how we should speak. And imagine a world in which everybody is doing this. I'm not saying that it should become a world of hypocrisy, where you're just falsely and superficially sweet and then stab each other in the back. Afterwards. That's not the kind of thing I'm saying. But we should be genuinely like that. And this is samskriti, truly refined behavior and truly refined speech. Then the next aspect of pleasing speech, now we'll be speaking about qualities of Lord Krishna regarding speech. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the nectar of devotion, Srila Rupa Goswami has identified 64 important qualities of Krishna. Krishna has unlimited qualities, but he has selected 64 important ones among them. And there are four qualities which are relevant to the subject of speech. And I will mention the quality and I will read what Srila Prabhupada has written here, which is a paraphrasing of Rupa Goswami's verses with a little comment by Srila Prabhupada. So this is quality number 7 amongst the 64. Krishna is a wonderful linguist. Vividadbhuta bhashavit. Vivid means various. Adbhuta means wonderful. Bhashavit means a speaker. So he is a speaker of many languages and he can speak wonderfully all these different languages. You know, I always tell young people who are in the process of learning in school and college, university, that this is the time for you to learn as many languages as you can. It's very important to learn language. Normally people know only one language, at the most another language. But the more the languages you learn, it's always better. You break the ice, you speak to somebody in his or her language, immediately they are disarmed, they are very happy. It helps you in your communication, it helps you get along wherever you may be, it also helps in preaching Krishna consciousness to people. And also it just expands the nature of our personality to learn different languages. And Krishna learned so many languages. So I'll read now from Srila Prabhupada's Nectar of Devotion. Rupa Goswami says that a person who knows the languages of different countries, especially the Sanskrit language, which is spoken in the cities of the demigods, as well as other worldly languages, including those of the animals, is called a wonderful linguist. Rupa Goswami specifically mentions three that Krishna was speaking, three categories. One was Sanskrit, the other was Prakrit, and the third was the animal languages. Sanskrit is a language spoken by the demigods, At one place the Prabhupada says it's also the language spoken in Goloka Vrindavan. Good to learn it then. Anyway, it's a refined language. So those devotees, it's not compulsory at all. Ultimately we want to become devotees and not necessarily Sanskrit experts. That's not the intention. But for those of you who have a taste, who like to learn, and that will enrich your reading and studying of the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the various prayers which are in Sanskrit, it will give you a very nice, sweet taste and understanding of these things. So for those of you who are inclined, it's always nice to learn Sanskrit, at least spoken Sanskrit and very basic Sanskrit. It's not compulsory, but if you can, it's nice. If you can't, don't worry, you can become a pure devotee without any problem. The second is Prakrit. Prakrit means other languages. You see, all languages ultimately have derived from Sanskrit. Sanskrit is a mother language. And so the other local languages are dialects. So Krishna knew all of those different dialects as well. Even in one language, let's say English, there's many different dialects. In England, for example, even the local people tell me that they can't understand the English spoken by someone from, you know, Leeds or Manchester, someone who's from the south. They speak English. But the accent is so different, the dialect is so different, the words are so different. And when I go to different countries, now I've got used to it. Now I can understand. But if someone speaks, you know, I can immediately understand, this is an Australian, this is an Englishman from this place, this is an American, this is a Jamaican, this is a Bengali, this is a Maharashtrian, whatever it is. So all languages are derived from that, and there are different dialects that emerge. So Krishna used to know, he knows those languages as well. So for us it's nice to know some local languages. And also the language of the animals, that may not be possible for us. So Prabhupada goes on to say, it appears from this statement that Krishna can also speak and understand the languages of the animals. An old woman in Vrindavan, present at the time of Krishna's pastimes, once stated in surprise, how wonderful it is that Krishna, who owns the hearts of the young girls of Rajabhumi, can nicely speak the language of Rajabhumi with the gopis, that is Brajabhasha. While in Sanskrit, he speaks with the demigods, and in the language of the animals, he can even speak with the cows and the buffaloes. Similarly, the language of the Kashmir province, and with the parrots and other birds, as well as in most common languages, Krishna is so expressive. She inquired from the gopis as to how Krishna had become so expert in speaking so many different types of languages. So language is an important part of speech. The next quality, quality number 8, is truthful. Satya Vakyaha. Here is Prabhupada's statement, description. A person whose word of honor is never broken is called truthful. Krishna once promised Kunti, the mother of the Pandavas, that he would bring her 5 sons back from the battlefield of Kurukshetra. After the battle was finished, when all the Pandavas had come home, Kunti praised Krishna because his promise was so nicely fulfilled. She said, even the sunshine may one day become cool, and the moonshine may one day become hot, but still, your promise will not fail. Rupa Goswami gives another example of Krishna speaking to Jarasandha. So we'll skip that. The next, number 9, is that Krishna is a pleasing talker, Priyam Vadaha. You remember that was also a quality that was mentioned in relation to Lord Ram. A person who can speak sweetly, even with his enemy, just to pacify him, is called a pleasing talker. Krishna was such a pleasing talker that after defeating his enemy Kaliya, in the water of the Yamuna, he said, "My dear king of the snakes, although I have given you so much pain, please do not be dissatisfied with me. It is my duty to protect these cows, which are worshipped even by the demigods. Only in order to save them from the danger of your presence have I been obliged to banish you from this place." So Krishna was very almost apologetic after he had subdued Kaliya. And he went up and said, "Kaliya, you know, no hard feelings. I'm sorry, I was a little harsh with you. But you know, the circumstances were such. So even in our day-to-day life, you know, in circumstances sometimes we speak harshly to somebody, but we should always go and patch up later. We should always go and make amends. Because you see, ultimately the relationship between Vaishnavas is very, very important. Little things don't matter so much in the larger scheme of things. We have a bigger job to do. We have to become pure devotees. We have to help others become pure devotees. And in our daily interactions, invariably, the three modes of material nature acting very strongly will create friction between people, misunderstandings. Therefore, we should always not let these misunderstandings grow to the point that it spoils our relationship to devotees and makes us feel ill about others. You see, the situations are transient. They are temporary. The situation that happened today is transient. It will go. It will change tomorrow. But once the relationships are spoiled, then that remains for a long time. And we have to live with the devotees. We can't do without the devotees. So we should be very careful of how we speak in the association of devotees. And even when we do speak harshly for some reason that may be beyond our control, later we should always make amends. And Krishna is showing us the way. We should go up and apologize. It should never be an issue of ego. We should become Purvabhashi, like Lord Ram. Not that we wait for the other person to come. Let him come and say sorry first. Then I will go and say sorry. But let her come and say, make amends first, and then I will go. No. We follow in the footsteps of exalted devotees as well as the Supreme Lord Himself. And then the next quality, quality number 10, is that Krishna is fluent. Vavadukaha. And here's what Prabhupada says. A person who can speak meaningful words and with all politeness and good qualities is called Vavadukaha, or fluent. There is a nice statement in the Srimad Bhagavatam regarding Krishna speaking politely. When Krishna politely bade his father, Nanda Maharaj, to stop the ritualistic offering of sacrifice to the rain god Indra, a wife of one village cowherd man became captivated. She later thus described the speaking of Krishna to her friends. Quote, "Krishna was speaking to his father so politely and gently that it was as if he were pouring nectar into the ears of all present there. After hearing such sweet words from Krishna, who will not be attracted to him?" In the original, Srila Rupa Goswami also says that he spoke with clear, soft pronunciation. When we speak also, words should be clearly pronounced. And there are many devotees and people who speak, but the sentences trail off and you have to guess what they intended to say, what was the, you know. So it's a guessing game. When we should speak the complete sentence and we should speak the words clearly, pronounce them clearly, audibly. So Krishna spoke very meaningfully, he was very fluent. Then Prabhupada goes on to say, "Krishna's speech, which contains all good qualities in the universe, is described in the following statement by Uddhava. Quote, "The words of Krishna are so attractive that they can immediately change the heart of even his opponent. His words can immediately solve all of the questions and problems of the world. Although he does not speak very long, each and every word from his mouth contains volumes of meaning. These speeches of Krishna are very pleasing to my heart." So we should try to be concise in the way we speak. Normally, people have the habit of repeating what they say again and again. It's tempting to say, "Yes, I've heard it, please go on. I've noted the point, please continue. Yes, you mentioned that twice already, please say something else." There is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita we see, "Mitam cha saram hi vagmita iti." Vagmita means eloquence. So what is the definition of eloquence? Mitam means concise. And sara means essential. And so Mahaprabhu or Kaviraj Goswami describes, essential truth spoken concisely is eloquence. Yes? Essential truth spoken concisely is eloquence. Eloquence doesn't mean one just speaks and speaks and speaks and speaks. Not necessarily. That can also be eloquence if you're speaking meaningful words. So there are two aspects to eloquence. One is, it should be essential truth. And second is, it should be spoken concisely. What can be spoken in one sentence doesn't need two sentences to say it. Sometimes you may elaborate just for the sake of clarifying something or emphasizing something. So therefore, the idea of repetition also exists in the scriptures. Sometimes, three times things are said. Can you give me an instance of that? Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Kala Nasteva, 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 Tiranyata. So is that ineloquence? It's also eloquent. But sometimes things are repeated in speech to give emphasis to that point. So here also, it is emphasized. When you say something three times, then it means you're really emphasizing that very much. So too many words actually cheapen the value of our speech, you know. So it's better we speak less and get the message across. Okay, so we will move on. Here are some quotes now that I would like to give from the Mahabharata since we spoke about Vidura. This is about criticism. What does Vidura say? "Fools seek to injure the wise by false criticism, rebuke and evil speech. The consequence is that they take upon themselves the sins of the wise, while the wise, freed from their sins, are forgiven." So if I criticize someone, what happens is I take on his bad qualities. So he's relieved of those bad qualities and I get them. And he's free. So who benefits? The person who criticized benefits. And we get into a problem. Actually, it's also said about guests like that. I don't have a scriptural reference for that, but there's generally one of those things that's said in folk wisdom. That when a guest comes to your house, if the guest goes away unhappy or dissatisfied, the guest leaves behind his or her impiety or sins and takes away your piety. So better treat the guest nicely. So similarly, criticizing. Unnecessarily, this criticizing doesn't help anybody. Yes, by a person who is in a position to point out a fault, whose duty it is to point out the fault, and who does it according to the situation, the time, the place, and circumstance, who speaks in the right manner according to knowledge and dharma, that is necessary. Constructive criticism is good, but not negative, harmful criticism, which can be destructive. Also in the Rig Veda it is said, those who defame others are themselves defamed. We also know in the Nectar of Instruction, for example, Rupa Goswami has spoken about criticism, how an advanced devotee is one who is completely freed of the tendency to criticize others. Also the Srimad Bhagavatam says, Nirmatsaranam Satam. The Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for those whose hearts are free from envy and the propensity to criticize others. So these are very important for the development of our Krishna consciousness, that we regulate our speech like that. Therefore, control of speech and the culture of speech is very important. Actually, this was meant to be control of speech. This is again Vidura speaking. The control of speech, O king, is said to be most difficult. It is not easy to hold a long conversation, uttering words full of meaning and delightful, not to the heavens, to the hearers. A little typo here. But it's also delightful to the heavens. Well-spoken speech is productive of many beneficial results, and ill-spoken speech is the cause of evils. Yes, so we were speaking yesterday morning also, how it is so difficult to control our speech. And here Vidura says another interesting thing. Not easy to hold a long conversation that is meaningful and delightful. Long conversation is there, yes. People have long conversations, much ado about nothing. I was narrating this in one lecture in India, that many years ago, there's a brahmacharya was traveling in a train in India. And you know, it's your destiny what kind of co-passengers you get in life. You're sitting in the train. You know, there's always a thought that crosses to my mind whenever I go to a plane or a train, who's going to be next to me? Yes? You don't know. Because I had this experience one when there was, in a flight, when there was one young Gujarati boy sitting next to me, who was drinking away like a fish. And then he spilled his alcohol all over me. And then I didn't have spare clothes because it's in the check-in luggage. And in an aircraft with this 30,000 feet in the sky, you have no choice. Anyway, that's a long story. So you're always worried about who is going to be your neighbor. So on this fateful occasion, I had two middle-aged to elderly ladies sitting in front of me. And they had much to talk about. And by the time the journey was over, I had acquired a fair degree of expertise in understanding all their family politics and what was happening in their house and what was happening in whose house. They thought I couldn't understand their language, but I was understanding it perfectly. And they were just going on and on and on. They looked like frail ladies. But I was just marveling at the stamina they had. They showed, you know, when I give a lecture for one, after some time, you know, you do get a little, you know, you need some water or something. They were going full of fun. You know, they were speaking and I was wishing I had that kind of energy. They speak and speak and speak and speak. So they were having, and finally, actually, I had to request them, please, can you please stop talking for 5 minutes? 5 minutes, only 5 minutes. With great difficulty, they couldn't do it actually. They couldn't do it. They just, I think, managed to for 2 minutes or something. So the urge to speak so much. So long conversations, it's not hard. But what is hard? when long conversations have meaningful words and they're delightful in speech to the hearer, then it is good. Again, here he also speaks about well-spoken speech having beneficial results and ill-spoken speech being the cause of evils. Another word about how one should not speak harshly to others. Very interesting examples given here, analogies. A forest cut by hatchets may again grow, but one's heart, wounded by ill-spoken words, never recovers. Weapons such as arrows can be easily extracted from the body, but a dagger of words plunged deep into the heart cannot be taken out. Arrows of words are shot from the mouth. Smitten by them, one grieves day and night. A learned man should not discharge such arrows, for they touch the very vitals of others. So especially as devotees, we should be very cautious. We should know that every word is like an arrow. If it's a pleasant word, it's an arrow of flowers. When Bhishma was shooting arrows at Krishna in the battlefield, Krishna was feeling them to be arrows of flowers. Bhishma was a devotee, and he was reciprocating with Krishna in the mood of vir rasa, rasa of chivalry, because Krishna wanted to engage him in chivalry rasa, vir rasa. So when we shoot arrows, not physical arrows, but arrows from our mouth, as Vidura said here, if those arrows are sweet words, if those words are sweet, the arrows will be like flowers. But if we speak harsh words,